You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Mm-hmm.
Arr.
Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the 11th season of Doctor Who, Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Woo!
Are there dinosaurs in this?
I think so.
They try.
It consists of six episodes that aired from January 12th, 1974 to February 16th, 1974.
True facts!
And I'd like to give a special shout out to Bisexual Brigadier for getting the DVDs for us.
Thank you. It's getting to the point now where if we get DVDs in the mail... from Bisexual Brigadier, I know it's going to be a good episode.
Spoilers, I guess. We like this one.
How come I don't get any DVDs in the mail?
No one loves you.
Oh, damn.
I'm sorry. We love you.
I was going to have my toddler on this podcast to talk about dinosaurs, and you guys missed out on that just because of Joe's mean-spirited ways. Also, he's completely unobliging and would not talk about dinosaurs unless I didn't ask him to.
You got to use some reverse psychology on him?
Reverse psychiatry.
So, as you can probably tell, we have a special guest today.
It's me, your favorite guest.
Ray Friesen.
Dun, 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 dun. Don't confuse me with Vince. That demeans us both.
How's it going, Ray?
It's going good. My wife got called away in the middle of the night to go do medical things for people. She helps. She's a birth assistant. So we had a weird me and Wellington morning without other people around. And in general, I'm just trying to get caught up in all my cartooning that I need to do. Oh, plus, we all did a thing together, except for Tony.
Yeah, I had nothing to do with this.
Our ebook, our first novel is out. Joe and I and other friend of the show, who I am not ever mistaken for, Vincent E.L., wrote a novel together, and it's basically great.
The Princess and the Pterodactyls by J.B. Hiveman.
I've read parts of it. It's good.
You read the good parts.
Yeah.
It's spelled Hive Mind, but it's pronounced Hiveman.
Oh, yeah. That's important. And I was going to say it's, you know, ties into this episode because it has dinosaurs in it, but pterodactyls are not dinosaurs.
But there are pterodactyls in this.
There are pterodactyls in this. They are from a similar time period. And it's like if you're sorting the toys into the animals and the dinosaurs pile, which, you know, I have to do this very frequently. Pterodactyls, they go in the dinosaur pile, not the animal pile. Woolly mammoths go in the animal pile, even though I lobbied against that. I don't make the rules.
You could have just like a prehistoric pile.
Yeah, you could, except for Wellington says no and puts them with the other elephants, and then they have adventures.
Everything I know about dinosaurs, I learned from the Ice Age series.
Really? Not Jurassic Park?
And Jurassic Park. I haven't seen Jurassic World, though. My knowledge is just contained to the park.
Well, it's reached the point where the Jurassic series is mostly just referencing the Jurassic series, so it can't necessarily keep up with new dinosaur things. It has to give you the dinosaurs that you are known and expecting. I mean, they tried to give the raptors feathers in one in Jurassic Park 3, but it didn't work out. We'll talk about my opinions on dinosaurs in this episode when we get to it, because I have a lot of opinions about dinosaurs. Not facts. I don't have dinosaur facts. I have dinosaur opinions. I wrote a whole book about it.
Yeah, because Ray here, he wrote, what was the name of the book?
Dinosaurs A to Z, I think. A to Z. I did it with a British guy.
I remember I wanted it. I suggested the title Dina, D-I-N-A to Z, A-U-R.
And we rejected it before you had even finished talking.
How would you pronounce that?
Dinosaur, D-I-N-A to Z, A-U-R.
I'll admit it was not the most exciting title, especially considering how many other dinosaur ABC books there are.
But yours is the Rayest.
Mine is the Rayest, and it's probably the funniest. I can make that claim because most of the others strive to be accurate, and that wasn't something I was worried about.
If it was a Vincent E.L. dinosaur ABC book, it would be 100% accurate.
And never released.
Basically be an encyclopedia.
All right, let's talk about Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Let's do it!
Let's!
Episode 1!
Which I have titled... Invasion?
Question mark?
Yeah. The reason I call it Invasion with a question mark is because The serial is called Invasion of the Dinosaurs, but this episode does not say that. It just says, Invasion.
They didn't want to spoil it.
They were trying to be, like, cagey and secret about the dinosaurs from a out-of-the-show, promoting-it perspective, which isn't ideal because dinosaurs make everything sell better, so you gotta just spoil it.
Also, somebody blew it anyway.
Yeah, it was basically, like, I think it was TV Comic or something, or whatever the equivalent, the UK equivalent of the TV Guide is, just posted a big advert of him being attacked by dinosaurs.
Somebody had their wires crossed. The first episode, Dinosaur List, they might show up at the end of the cliffhanger, I forget. But it has a very menacing tone, which was really intriguing. But it just has a very menacing tone with the military, which was, like, a little chilling.
It's true. It's very... They're under, like, martial law right now because of the invasion. And, like, it's like, there are looters. Just if you find them...
If you started this episode not knowing anything at all, it's just there's empty streets. There's nobody around. Phones aren't working. It's very weird.
Which, if you've been to London, there's always people in the streets. So you go, like, what is happening?
Like, someone is telling the brig, like, to basically shoot looters on sight. And the brig is like, I won't do that? I have some ethical questions about that? He's like, well, you will do it, because, you know, you take orders.
Are all of the people who outrank the Brigadier, they never seem to be... It's like in Starfleet, the admirals always turn out to be evil. It seems to be the same with UNIT. Like, that happens a lot, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure that the Brig is 100% great, so... I mean, he's good.
He's like, well-meaning. He'll be like, maybe we shouldn't shoot citizens until after we try them. And the other guys are like, nah, just shoot them.
He's definitely grown a lot since his first his first season with three, I'll say.
I mean, he's definitely still like, I have to follow orders. I'm in the military. But he has a little bit of like, oh, these orders are bad. I'm gonna find a workaround.
Especially in this serial, where he kind of just straight up ignores the people above him for a lot of the time.
He should just start his own military.
Yeah.
I think he's learned from that time he blew up the Silurians, though, so... Remember that? That happened.
That was harsh.
So, the Doctor and Sarah Jane, which this is... I've seen Sarah Jane in the new Who, but this is the first time I've seen her in an old episode when she was Lil.
Isn't she so little?
She says she's, like, 21 or 22 or something. It's like, and you're a reporter for a newspaper? What was the job market like back then?
Oh, wait, she's a journalist?
Or, like, a photographer, at least.
She's a journalist. The last serial was her first serial, and...
They established the hell out of that fact.
She, like, said she was a journalist, like, twice an episode, at least.
I provide an important perspective to your show, which is person who's not doing everything order or following along properly. Just person at random.
That might change some of your perspective on some of the things that happen later in the serial.
Oh, man.
Like, big deals for us. Probably not so much for you.
Well, I listen to the podcast, so I think I know what you're talking about.
Okay. But, yeah, they see... The Doctor and Sarah Jane see one of these looters... And he pulls a gun on them and steals some stuff and runs away. And then they hear a loud crash and they run out and there is a wrecked car. We don't see what caused the wreck. Spoilers, it's a dinosaur. But they cut to a shot of him out of the car, like, bloody. Like, his face is covered in blood.
That was shocking to me.
Yeah, that was not PG. That was pretty harsh.
I was surprised.
There's a lot in this first serial that feels very harsh.
Especially because until we get to UNIT and they say London has been evacuated, there's been a crisis, we have no idea what's going on. And they could have stretched that out farther, to be honest, because that mood of, like, why is London abandoned? Why are there all these looters? What is happening? Is really intriguing.
It's really good. There's a lot of just, like, intrigue and like a thriller aspect to this.
Considering it could have just been a, like, monsters episode, it really, like, wasn't. It was a government conspiracy episode that happened to have monsters in it.
We had planned to watch three episodes one day and three episodes the next. And when we got to the end of those three episodes, I was like, oh, we're finishing this. Because I'm like, I have to know what happens. And so much of that is just like, what is going on here? And like,
who's that guy? Is he with those guys? Why'd they kill that guy? I thought they liked him.
What's happening? I gotta know. And not in, like, sometimes when you're watching Doctor Who and you're saying, what's happening?
In a bad way.
Yeah, it's because no one really knows. The actors don't know, the writers don't know. This is not what I mean this time.
I feel like, as a whole, this is sort of a final thoughts thing. Special effects aside, this episode was very well executed.
Yeah. I have very strong feelings about this episode, because I think it's great.
You say the thing about it being, it could have been a monster episode. The thing is, it was originally conceived of just the sort of intrigue
aspect. And they're like, throw some dinosaurs in it. This is boring.
Basically, yeah.
No, definitely if it had been just the intrigue, I think it would have worn a little bit thin. But I feel like this is one of the first six-parters I've seen that didn't feel like it should have been a four-parter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have probably seen ones that also fall in that category. But as I've been watching Old Who with you guys, I feel like we've seen a couple that are like, come on, man, fix your pacing. And this one had pretty decent pacing.
It actually kind of needs to be a little slow and moody because of what's going on. So the doctor and Sarah Jane see another car, follow it, and it's more looters.
The doctor ends up taking that car, right?
Yeah, they have like a small little fight scene where he does some karate and they knock him out. And the looters run away. But then there's another attack scene because they're inside this like warehouse and there's a jeep there that they're going to take, basically. Something flies down the stairway. Big rubber pterodactyl on a string.
This is our first real dinosaur that we see. Well, it's not a dinosaur. We've established this fact.
It's a dinosaur-adjacent animal.
It doesn't look great.
But it's fun.
It is fun. I'm always kind of pleased when somebody's, like, wrestling a big rubber prop.
I'll say it's well shot, and it conveys the same sort of mood. It's just that the thing itself looks kind of rubbery and fake.
Yeah.
Like, the doctor is getting in the jeep trying to start it, and it busts through, like, the passenger side window, and he's having to beat it off. Wait, no.
I think the pterodactyl is the only creature that kind of gives them a run for their money. It's probably the most effective because it's really, like, quick. The other dinosaurs, which I think is partially because of the mood of dinosaurs of the time, are very slow and lumbering. And I'm sure that's for a number of reasons, both at the time they kind of thought of dinosaurs as being big and lumbering, and B, with their special effects, they weren't really able to get them to do very much. The dinosaurs are not all that menacing. I could see how people at the time would be excited by them, but even...
Oh, they weren't.
At the time, people were not impressed.
No, I mean, they just kind of swayed menacingly. They never, like, moved around. But the pterodactyl, in an enclosed space, like, they were in the garage, and then later, the pterodactyl swooping around at them, it's pretty cool. It's definitely a what is happening, but in a good way.
Probably the most effective one.
Yeah, of the dinosaurs they have, great adjacent reptiles, it's the most does something.
But they end up stealing that jeep and driving off, and they get pulled over.
By UNIT. I guess it's UNIT. I don't know. It's some military.
I don't know if it's UNIT or just the military, and to what aspect UNIT and the military talk to each other.
They get taken into this processing place, basically.
There's an actual looter there. So, like, there's a third prisoner there. And it's...
They ask their names dire. And their age. The doctor gives a fake name, which is John Smith, and says no relation, because to Sarah Jane Smith. They ask his age, and he's like, you wouldn't believe me. And they're like, guilty!
The thing that I find interesting is later on they sort of say, I feel like it might be the brigadier of like, we're going to put all the looters aside and deal with them after the crisis. Whereas as the other people are like, let's just execute them. And when they're prosecuting the one looter guy, he's very much like, I am a looter. That is his like style. He's a scruffy little cockney thief. But then the doctor comes in and he's got a posh voice and nice clothes. I feel like at the time they would have said, wait, you are obviously not in the same category as him. We might talk you over a little bit more, or at least not just say shoot on sight. Because he's, you know, he's a magician.
Yeah, but he may have looted those clothes.
Yeah, but he's got the voice. I don't know. I feel like...
You can't make assumptions like that.
I can make assumptions like that, and I do.
But no, the looter who's there is like, they're basically going to send us to a camp, like, indefinitely, like, until the crisis is over, and who knows when that's going to be.
I want to talk about the photos, though.
I want to talk about the photos.
Because they're adorable. Because the doctor is just, like, cheeseballing through the whole thing.
He is.
He's like, smiles real big, and he turns aside, and he smiles real big.
This is my good side.
And, like, Sarah Jane does the same thing. I think mostly just because the doctor did.
Yeah, she just follows suit.
And then the doctor's like, can you get one of both of us? Come on, join in.
The military is not amused.
That was a very doctory thing to do. That was a good way to defray the tension and show that just sort of general, I'm not taking... The thing that you are taking very seriously, I am not taking it seriously.
I saw a post somebody made, some fan art, where it was Sarah Jane and the doctor, and she had gotten the mugshots framed for him. and they were hanging on the wall.
He would dig that. He probably has so many.
I think I said that during that scene. I was like, how many different mugshots do you think the Doctor has? I bet he has like an album of them that he cherishes.
There's a few in there that are like of future incarnations. And he's like, wait, where did these come from?
The Master scrapbooked it for him and gave it to him on one Time Lord solstice.
So then we get to the looter mentions to them that, because they're like, what is going on? We don't know. And he's like, there's monsters. And we get to see our first actual dinosaur bust through this, like, house.
Dude, that was really dramatic. For as, like, not great as the dinosaur looks, like, busting through the wall was kind of cool.
Yeah, like, it, like, knocks the roof off and dust everywhere, I guess. The units, or whatever, the military is throwing grenades and shooting it and nothing's working because it's giant dinosaur. What is your opinion of the scientific accuracy of this? I believe it's the T-Rex.
This is a T-Rex.
Yeah.
They have it standing in the traditional man inside a costume pose instead of the I can run around for real pose. So the T-Rex is not as dynamic looking as it could be. Again, it's the time. The opinion about dinosaurs was different at that time.
Apparently a lot of children wrote in and said that it looks like an Allosaurus.
Because we're like, technically, that's not a T-Rex.
Well, I mean, an Allosaurus and a T-Rex look very similar. An Allosaurus is kind of a smaller, earlier guy in the same family. Just that, like, fluorescent green that he was colored, they could have done something more interesting with that. I like dinosaurs to have interesting patterns on them. And then the Doctor's like, this is the most terrifying killing machine that's ever been made. Watch as it stands around. I feel like they could have done better even in the 70s with no budget.
That's what everyone involved thinks, and everyone who worked on it, everyone who watched it.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is that they were put together very last minute. Because, I mean, they tried hard a little bit. They had a wide-shot T-Rex and a close-up T-Rex. I feel like they had at least two different ones because, like, they would cut to its head moving around, and that was a different head than the full body one.
We did watch, because we did get the DVD.
Thanks again, Bisexual Brigadier.
You're the best. We watched a little, like, special on it, and I don't remember who it was who was talking, saying they weren't sure about doing dinosaurs, and, like, they found somebody, and it was, like, somebody who had experience in special effects, and they're like, oh, yeah, we can totally do that. It'll be easy. And they're like, okay, like, if you really think you can do it, yeah, totally. And he's like, and then, you know. Then we saw them, and I wasn't quite happy.
I'm probably too late to do anything about it at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just gotta keep
just
going.
Just gotta roll with it. When I first saw the T-Rex, I kind of was like, that wasn't as bad as I was expecting.
It could have been worse, but not by much, and could have been better, but I don't know how they could have made it better with the tools that they had.
It almost looks like a dinosaur from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
I mean, a lot of the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park are dudes in costumes and puppets. They've got like two or three CG shots that really sell it, and then the rest is really well angled cameras and tight editing, you know?
I think at no point did this like ruin the serial for me either. Like, at no point where I was like, these are so bad that, like, I just can't even watch it.
No, I agree. I was definitely able to go, like, yeah, I buy this. For the purposes of Doctor Who, this is fine.
This'll do.
Have either of you watched the television show that I can only presume was based on this episode from the BBC called Primeval?
No.
Because it ran for 5 or 6 series. They changed the main cast out way too many times. But dinosaurs keep randomly appearing all over the place in England, and these are the government guys that have to go track them down and capture them. It was very obviously influenced by this episode, them going, we can improve on that.
We can do that, but with good dinosaurs.
Yeah, CG dinosaurs in an actual budget. I quasi recommend it.
I might quasi watch it.
Yeah.
So they decide to escape from just sitting around this holding office, I guess. And the Doctor throws up like a fake fight with him and the looter.
Ah, the classic fake fight to escape your captor.
And the guard comes up and is like, break it up, break it up. And the Doctor like nerve pinches him on the neck, slowly drops him to the ground.
But then the looter runs and he's like, I'm going this way, you guys go that way. And like screws him over.
I think he was going to shoot him, actually. He got a gun and pointed it at him, and the Doctor kicked it out of his hand.
And said, no honor among thieves.
Rude.
I feel like had this been a modern-day episode, that looter character would have stuck around for a while. Like, he would have gone, like, I'm sticking with you guys, you seem to know what's going on. And, like, they would have taken him into unit, and he's stuffing all the unit stuff down his trousers and stuff. That would have been great.
But we do get to see the Doctor kick the gun out of his hand and then literally, like, pick him up and throw him onto, like, there's, like, a little stage area. He just, like, chucks him onto it. And I was like, damn.
He's not messing around today. He's got shit to do.
So they run out. They see a truck. They try to steal it.
It's the truck they were going to be loaded into anyway.
And the Doctor does this, like, hilarious, like, wah, wah face. It's so good. Because the military's like, where are you going? And he just... and then crosses his arms and smirks. It's a very,
it's like,
long reaction,
I'm only but... mildly inconvenienced by this. And adorable.
So then he is handcuffed to Sarah Jane and thrown in the back of the car, the truck, and they're driving around and get stopped by a dinosaur, the T-Rex.
That's the end.
That is the cliffhanger. There's a big goofy looking T-Rex. That's the end of episode one. We are now into episode two, which I have called Of the Dinosaurs! With an exclamation point.
What a big reveal.
It's called Everyone Get on the Floor, : Everyone Do the Dinosaur.
Speaking of episode one, by the way, was wiped, was deleted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was in black and white.
Yeah, the DVD has a black and white, and it has a colorized option, which I didn't actually have to send to Ray. I sent Ray some
it's
episodes.
It's okay. I think he fared better.
Yeah, because they... It's the worst colorization that's been done on the ones that have been wiped. Because
did they just make everything purple and green?
Yeah, that's what I do. Before, there's been a handful of three episodes that have been wiped that exist in black and white, but there's, for some reason, it was still embedded with the color information, so they could pull the color out of that and, like, recolor it using that.
Life sure has gotten better now that scientists have invented magic.
But this episode, they didn't have that. It only had, like, I think the red and green channel.
Yeah.
So they could pull some of it, but then they had to, like, guesstimate the rest of it. And it's fairly
obvious.
It's just
very fuzzy. Yeah. And
redder than you would want. But not bad. Probably should have just watched the black and white. But I want color, damn it.
I paid for color. I'm getting it.
But for some reason, it was only the first episode that was wiped. There was a theory that it got wiped because the invasion got wiped, and that first episode isn't called Invasion of the Dinosaurs, it's just called Invasion.
So they're like, oh, that's another episode of the invasion.
Let's not check.
But that apparently isn't true. It was just, they were supposed to wipe the whole serial, and they only did the first episode for some reason. And they forgot to do the rest.
Oh, so somebody just, like, didn't follow through.
Yeah, I'm glad they don't do that anymore.
People can record stuff now, so it wouldn't have worked. Them being able to do, like, reconstructions because people took photographs of their television. I'm like, I like Doctor Who, and I would never do that.
And there had to have been people who did it, like, from, like, the very beginning. That's crazy.
Before they knew that it was going to be good?
Yeah, exactly.
Was there just some guy... We did that to every single TV show, and like, I will have them all.
I sometimes go on YouTube and just watch network graphics packages compilations, and there are people who will be like, this is their, like, the graphics package from, like, 80-something to today. You know, like, when you have, like, an ID at the top of an hour?
Uh-huh.
Those have those throughout the year.
I've seen that with, like, production logos, too, like...
Which, the one that I watched also had lots of, like, very long gaps where commercials could be inserted, but there were no commercials. That seemed weird since, you know, it's a BBC thing. They don't have commercials in the first place. I take it yours didn't have that, but there'd be, like, a minute-long patch of black in between exciting bits three times an episode. I didn't vote for it. Okay, fans of this show, have you seen the episodes before and you just enjoy hearing Joe and Tony watching them? Or is this is like, I'm going to watch a new episode of Doctor Who to me and I'm just going to listen to my friends talk about it? Like, vote now. Tell me which one you are.
I have heard of both. I think the majority of people probably watch them with us because there's a lot of people who watch it like, oh, I'm also doing this watch-a-thon thing. I want to hear other people's opinions because not everyone's watching this show.
I have only watched the episodes that you have made me to watch. The rest I know about via you talking about them on your Podular cast.
We have a couple people who don't actually watch Doctor Who at all, but listen to the podcast.
That's weird. Well, like I have no intention of watching Doctor Who. I just like hearing episodes recounted by these guys.
It's just because we're so captivating.
Yeah.
You are fairly captivating, especially one of
you. It's quicker than watching the actual serial.
Barely.
But the military shoots at the dinosaurs, which lets the Doctor and Sarah Jane escape. But there's also, like, they get the T-Rex to move, but it just backs slowly away like it did something awkward.
It shuffles backwards, like, oh, sorry.
And then goes back to swaying menacingly. It's like it's about to do something the entire episode.
And the Doctor and Sarah Jane, they run away and hide and get out of their handcuffs and start talking about what's going on and are interrupted by a guy from King Richard's time, was that?
I thought for the longest time he was kind of a caveman, but he apparently was just a peasant.
He thinks the Doctor is a wizard.
The Doctor's like, no, I'm not a wizard. And more modern Doctors would be like, yes, I am a wizard. Boo.
Literally the last serial we watched, he was in like medieval England and mistaken for a wizard and was like, no, I'm not a wizard.
Was he just fed up to hear about people not recognizing his lack of wizardliness?
I think it's just like he wants to get credit for it, him being so
smart.
It's not
magic, I'm just a genius.
Yeah, how dare you insinuate that I'm just not super clever.
Which I believe this episode, I cannot remember where exactly, but he like literally says, well, of course I'm right, about something that he's guessing at. And it ties into your theory of like, this Doctor is always right. And like the show acknowledges, like, if he says something, it is true.
It's very rare that he's wrong. Even when he just bullshits something, it turns out to be right. But, like, he gets mad that the Doctor's not a wizard and, like, attacks him and gets, like, this red spiral graph appears around him. He goes backwards in time and then disappears. So Sarah Jane. She goes backwards in time, too. The Doctor is unaffected by it.
Because he's not affected by time thingies.
I guess so. But he's like, it's a time eddy. Okay, wait, he's not affected by time eddies? He's not affected by time eddies?
No.
Then why the hell was the first Doctor stuck in a time eddy?
After the first Doctor got stuck in a time eddy, he says, right, I'm going to take this time eddy safety training and never get stuck in a time eddy again. It's like if you almost drown and you're like, you know what? I am going to learn how to swim, damn it. By the way, Time Edward makes great pasta.
Speaking of, okay, so he says he's from King Richard's time. He says something about King Richard.
Yeah, they ask him, like, what year is it? And he's like, what? And then they say, who's king? And he goes, King Richard, of course.
And then later,
Sarah Jane's recounting this to Unit, because they get picked up by Unit. But she says King John, and it bothered me.
Well, I mean, she forgot. She's like, it's one of them old-ass kings. It doesn't actually matter which one. I'm not trying to, like, zero in on him.
It's not like I pay attention to what people say. It's not like I'm a journalist or anything.
In my defense, I would make that same mistake, not remembering which king the guy was from.
But she's a journalist. She's got to remember these details.
Do you know how many newspaper articles are very inaccurate? The answer is most of them. Like, it's no joke, there's usually at least one patently wrong thing in every news article that's ever come out.
That's probably true. I know we had a news article written about us when we got engaged, and it's like 95% wrong.
That's true, it is.
I've had probably a dozen newspaper articles written about me back when I was precocious and newsworthy, and all of them are wrong in some way.
Yeah, they get picked up by Unit, Brig, and they have some coffee or tea. I'm not sure if it's coffee or tea, but either way, the Doctor puts way too much sugar in his drink.
How much did he put in? Because that's correct.
Like 4 spoonfuls.
Yeah, 4 spoonfuls at least.
I put in 3.
I don't know, he just kept going, which apparently 12 did in a recent episode.
He just kept putting sugar cubes.
What happens is you do that one time for comedic effect, and then you go, oh man, this is great. I'm going to do it like this all the time.
Chris had this whole story about putting too much sugar in his coffee. He took too many packets on accident, and he's like, well, I got to use this packet because I took it. And, like, just kept progressively adding more sugar to his coffee that way.
To me, that's the thing. Having sugar packets in your pockets for later, who knows when you'll need those? That's great. I can think of so many reasons where having extra sugar just in the wild would come in handy. That's what the Doctor's doing, is he's, like, palming that sugar and hiding it up his sleeve for later. Like, we're going to go to, like, the planet of picnics, and there's going to be giant ants again, which I am terrified of, so I'm going to stock up on this sugar to... If it was going to the planet of the giant dogs, I'd be hiding sausages up my sleeve. This is just what I am prepared for.
He's got pockets, though. Why does he need to stuff everything up his sleeve?
He's a magician, Joe!
He's got the coat. That's true.
Yeah, he is a magician, not a wizard.
They get filled in about the whole dinosaur thing, and... There's like a map with different color-coded dinosaur pins in it.
What's-His-Face is very proud that he has them color-coded by type of dinosaur. The red ones are for this, then the blue ones are for that.
Oh yeah, Benton's very
Benton.
Excited.
It's Benton. Benton. This is a very important distinction we need to make right now. It's Benton and not Yates.
Joe has hated Yates for a long time, and this episode we realize, oh, the writers didn't like him either.
What's bad is I kind of came around to him in the last serial he was in.
He's so cute in the...
The Green Death.
Green Death. He's adorable in it.
We'll get there.
Yates.
So they get told about the... Done. Okay, so the general that's over it. His name is Finch.
General, I'm not at all suspicious. What are you talking about?
The doctor's like, these dinosaurs are misplaced in time. That's why they keep appearing and disappearing. Someone's like, bring them and then make them go away. And he like refuses to believe it. I mean, mostly because he's in on it. But he's like, I don't buy that. That's some sci-fi hogwash. I think it's a mad scientist breeding dinosaurs. How is that any less sci-fi hogwash?
Like, at the point where there are dinosaurs materializing and dematerializing, if someone gives you an explanation, you just have to roll with it. You're like, fine.
Yeah, I feel like when ridiculous things are going on and you're aware that there are ridiculous things, you can't be like, well, that doesn't make sense. Because it's like, yes, it doesn't.
None of this does.
But he's trying to distract from the fact that he's in on it. So his explanation is, it makes enough sense. His character motivation holds out. If he was just a fine general who didn't believe the doctor, then it would be different.
We get the kind of the first scene that tipped Joe off, I think, about Yates.
Yates and, because there's a Stegosaurus appears and people go to check it out, but Sarah Jane and Yates are just sort of left alone in this room, and he's talking about how he's actually kind of enjoying this because he likes the empty streets and everything's peaceful and calm and etc. And,
isn't that nice?
Isn't that nice? And Sarah Jane's like, yo, I miss people.
And you know, not martial law.
And it honestly was at that point that I was like, Yates is in on it. That's very suspicious.
He said that and I was like, you've been against Yates this whole time. Leave Yates alone.
How wrong you were, Tony. How wrong you were.
I was wrong. I was wrong to stick up for Yates.
Update the spreadsheet.
So the doctor and unit get to the Stegosaurus and the doctor's like, I need a rope and a strong net.
That's his plan.
He's gonna lasso the Stegosaurus. What's your thoughts on the Stegosaurus?
Again, it's based on the 70s idea of what a Stegosaurus was, which is like, oh, this is the smallest brain creature we've ever seen. It's dumb and lumbery and doesn't do anything right. Like, the prevailing attitude was like, the dinosaurs are extinct because they didn't deserve to live. They died from moral failure. And so they're traditionally portrayed as like, yeah, they're dumb. No wonder they're dead. When they readjusted the posture on Stegosaurus to make his tail and neck go up higher, and so he doesn't look like a... He looks like, you know, like an animal that lives in the world. Again, they have him standing there swaying menacingly. And they have him and they have a long-necked dinosaur later. I don't know if they said what variety they thought it was. And they're just like, they're also gnashing their teeth and being like bitey and scary. And it's like, these are herbivores. The doctor says that they're herbivores, so it's not that they don't know. He calls them vegetarians, and they're still like, I'm gonna bite ya!
We definitely called it a brontosaurus.
Okay, the brontosaurus debacle is a whole nother thing. Basically, the paleontologists involved in a lot of the early dinosaur discoveries, William Edward Drinker Cope and Charles Othniel March, were so busy trying to, like, one-up each other that they did a lot of really sloppy work. And they've been trying to sort out the mess that they've made for a long, long time because they're like, just, I won't need to name as many dinosaurs as possible this month. That's a Brontosaurus. This one's a Apatosaurus. That one's a Diplodocus. Like, I'm pretty sure those are all the same kind of dinosaur. No, they're different. So there's actually no such thing as a Brontosaurus. Even though they're recently trying to say, no, wait, maybe this one really is a Brontosaurus. We're going to bring it back. It's like, just ditch that name. It's been tainted from years of misuse. You got to call it something else, man. The doctor would know this. And again, they gave the brontosaurus pointy teeth and had it be like, I'm gonna bite ya. I mean, it could have done just as much damage by like wandering around and knocking over buildings. It's not that it's not dangerous, it's just it wouldn't try and bite you.
Well, I think the doctor is aware that the stegosaurus isn't very...
Yeah, he specifically wants a brontosaurus or a stegosaurus.
Because it's not.
As opposed to a T-Rex.
Yeah, because it's not aggressive. But before he can capture the Stegosaurus, because he's want to capture it to figure out where it's coming from.
Right, he wants to study it and see why it's appearing. Also, he wants to ride it. Be serious. Like, I'm surprised when he has his lasso, he doesn't also have a cowboy hat on. If this was a modern Doctor Who, he would have to run to the TARDIS, fetch his cowboy hat, and come back to lasso the dinosaur.
But before he can capture it, it disappears in another time, Eddie. And the unit rewinds as well. He's the time Eddie rewinds time so that they don't see the dinosaur disappear.
Yes.
The doctor goes back to unit and Yates is asking him all sorts of questions about it.
Questions that are making Joe very suspicious.
And I'm like, he's being suspicious. The doctor is working on a dino disabler, basically, because he was like planning on bringing the Stegosaurus back and studying it. But he's got a thing that he can just shoot at the dinosaur and it'll figure something out. It'll be way less accurate, but... portable.
Yeah, he says his initial device is much more powerful, but the portable one will give them more options. So, because they're kind of like, why didn't you do a portable one already? And he's like, it wouldn't be as good. I'm really smart, you guys.
But yeah, Yates is asking a lot of questions about it. A lot of questions.
Too many questions.
Well, the Sarah Jane comes in and is bugging the doctor. And he's like, can you? Okay, fine. Just okay, whatever. Please leave. And then she does. And then as soon as she leaves, the brig comes in. And is like, oh, doctor, I found you.
Starts asking a million questions.
And the doctor's just, he can't get any peace. And he does this like full on, like, like grabbing his hair and...
He pulls the goofiest, exasperated face, and I love him.
Then we see the scientists who are doing the bad things with the dinosaurs.
We see the bad guys.
In their lab coats. They are visited by Yates. I was right. Never Yates. Always Benton.
Yates. I stuck up for you, Yates.
Yates is a traitor.
You betrayed me in this way when I stuck up for you.
When she needed you the most.
To be fair, Yates isn't necessarily
He's not straight bad. Up evil. Yeah. He's misguided.
He's definitely, he's a little bit misled, misguided. That's, I will get into, the people here are doing evil things for altruistic reasons. They're actually like positively motivated antagonists.
Do you think, too, like, Yates' involvement in this is, like, directly related to the things that happened to him in the Green Death?
Because he was undercover for some people who were doing bad things to the environment. Then he got hypnotized by them. It's gonna mess you up. And I think, yeah, like, he probably got out of that and was like, I want to do the complete opposite of that, but went too far.
I want to help the environment and found the wrong group of people. Because all throughout this serial, like, first he comes...
And warns them about the doctor.
Warns them about the doctor, and they're like, all right, well,
let's kill him. And he's like, no, we just need to discredit him. Like, that'll work.
I mean, he very, very firmly is like, I will not see anything bad happen to the doctor. I will not let any harm come to him. Because he still loves him. Yeah. Even though he's making bad choices. Yates, why? You were, like, gleeful.
I remember when I'm like, oh, that's Yates. That's the guy that Joe doesn't like. And then immediately he's like, I am sneaking around and doing not well reason things. I'm like, oh, he's a traitor. Joe's going to be so happy.
I've never seen Joe so vindicated.
Never Yates. Always been.
That's a weird song.
So they.
That's a song of victory, of being right.
So the doctor and unit find a brontosaurus, and they go out to do the same thing. But Yates puts a little magnet thing
on his gun. He sabotages the gun, Yates.
So the doctor.
He trusted you.
The doctor is trying, is slowly sneaking up on the brontosaurus, and then another Tom Eddie appears. And the brontosaurus disappears.
And then there's a freaking T-Rex. There's a T-Rex and the gun is broken and it's attacking the doctor and it's Yates' fault. I mean, he feels bad and he gets the gun and he takes it off and he shoots the T-Rex.
That happens in the next episode.
Okay.
The T-Rex appearing is the end of episode 2. We're now into episode 3, which I've called Dinosaurs in a Hangar.
So he has to quickly undo his sabotage so that, you know, they don't all die.
They don't all die from the T-Rex swaying at them.
And Yates is pissed.
He's furious because he knows that the other bad guys did this shit on purpose.
But they, you know, talk him out of not liking them, I guess.
Yeah.
And convince him to sabotage some more.
He did not achieve his objectives in that conversation. I'm mad about sabotaging things on your behalf. Well, how about you sabotage some more things on our behalf? Okay.
Basically, they promise that they're not going to try and hurt the doctor. They're just going to get him out of the way. They're fucking liars, because they totally try and kill the doctor again, another time.
Plus, they're very sinister about it. They're like, no, we won't do anything bad.
They've put the brontosaurus, I believe it. No, it was the T-Rex. Sorry, they put the T-Rex in the hangar. They chained it down. The doctor's talking about, like, they must have develops time travel. There's these, or Sarah Jane mentions there's this person who's been working on time travel, one of these scientists. The doctor once again mentions the Blinovich effect. I forget what it's called, but he mentioned it in Day of the Daleks. And he's like, he must have figured out that problem, whatever that means. We still don't have an explanation for it. I think we eventually do, and it contradicts everything that's happened before.
I feel like there are all different types of time travel that accomplish different things depending on, well, the needs of the story. But, like, there's not just cars, there are also bicycles.
Oh, and the scientist who was working on the time travel has disappeared. His name's Whitaker. He's one of the scientists at the that Yates has been chilling with. Sarah Jane's like, I want to take some pictures of the dinosaur for my story. And Brig is like, what? No.
Are you a journalist?
And Sarah Jane sort of complains about this to General Finch, and he offers to help because he's bad.
Yeah, he like puts on this like very like sweet, nice, helpful persona, which is very at odds with how he's just been.
And then like the Brig and the Doctor are very weirdly talking about it, like, oh, Sarah Jane's gonna get some. Nice.
Good for her.
I mean, that guy's kind of a weird dude, but, you know, whatevs.
Whatever she's into.
I don't know who it was. It's either Yates or Finch go in and are mysteriously looking at the T-Rex. I don't know if it was Yates. I don't think it was Yates. I think it was Finch.
I think this is the thing.
Yates looks upset later.
Finch did to sabotage to kill the Doctor that Yates didn't know about. And when Yates finds out, he's pissed again.
But not pissed enough to do anything.
But Sarah Jane goes to take photos of the T-Rex after getting permission and such from General Finch. And goes into the hangar. First, she's taking him through the window. Then she goes in. And then the T-Rex wakes up. Sarah Jane tries to run out, but the door is locked. The T-Rex, like, starts swishing its tail at the window, knocks a beam into her back, and she falls to the ground.
I thought this was kind of terrifying.
A bit.
Just a little bit, just a smidgen.
Our puppet's not good enough to have him try and bite her, so just let's do a beam swish into her tail.
The beam falls from the ceiling or something into her back, but she has a bruise on her head.
I think it...
Forehead.
Fell on her head.
The head of her back.
The head of her back. The back of her head. No, that's an actual thing. That's a thing. But the Doctor saves her. The T-Rex busts out of the building through the wall.
Which, when his chains are broken... They learn that it's sabotage, but they're like, they can't break. These are the chains specifically for locking a T-Rex of that size up with. I was like, you were just guessing, man. You don't know.
T-Rex couldn't possibly break these chains.
Before wasn't when he came up with the portable device thing. Before he was just going to stun the thing. Now he's going to work on the portable device.
Yes.
And he goes off into the TARDIS to do that. And
because he had his weird little like VCR set up to capture some data.
Yeah, because yeah. He brought the dinosaur there to, like, study it with his thing. And now it's, like, become clear that, like, maybe having a live dinosaur in a hangar is not a great idea. And I should just build a portable one.
But Sarah Jane's sort of left alone with Benton and starts piecing stuff together. And she's been told, basically, don't do anything because you're a lady.
Yeah. Just sit this out.
But she figures things out and she's like, it could
Sarah
be this, it could be that.
Jane kicks ass. I love her so much. She does so much in this serial. She basically figures everything out on her own. What did you say?
I said, I feel like she has more agency than any previous companion, male or female. But yeah, she ropes Benton into helping her too. And he's just like, oh.
Do you know anything behind the decision to make her like that? Just that some of the writers had enough of useless companions and wanted one that was very gets a job done?
I think she's the most useful companion we've had since, well, Lishaw.
I can imagine, like, I know what happened with Lishaw and Joe is that, like, Lishaw was very...
Was too competent. Whatever that means.
I mean, she wasn't around for very long, and so she didn't do a lot of plot-influencing things. And, like, Joe was a response to Lishaw. Joe was, like, I mean, at times written very sort of ditzy and, you know, not knowing things. Which is odd, because she started with, I mean, you know, she had a list of competencies that, like, would come into play sometimes and other times would not,
right.
Depending on who was writing her.
Having a character whose kind of job in the plot is to ask what is going on behalf of the audience makes sense. But you can do that without having the character be incompetent, because they're, like, exposed to weird things that they've never come across before. So anyone would be curious about why there are dinosaurs, or whatever.
Yeah, and that's why Sarah Jane, like, specifically having her be a journalist and asking questions and she's absolutely, I think, has been like one of the more active people we've had in a while. But he's still, yeah, there to, you know, question things.
I mean, she's a journalist. Her job is to ask questions.
The most important thing is that she goes out and gets answers, though.
She ropes Benton into getting her a car.
Benton is not happy about this, because Benton has basically been asked, like, you know, stay here, keep an eye on her. And she's like, no, screw that. I got shit to do. And
he's
Benton
like,
is like,
okay.
Okay. This is a really, like, in addition to you being super vindicated about Yates, this is a really good Benton episode.
He does some awesome
this
shit.
Episode was, this serial, whole serial is basically written for you specifically.
I know, it's great. I haven't had one of those in a while. But Sarah Jane goes and visits the minister, who actually we didn't even talk about his introduction. He sort of talks to the doctor in an earlier episode, but he's sort of like, I guess, running things and stuff.
He's the person in the government with the most amount of power who is not evacuated. He's like, I'm the guy on the scene who can make decisions based on actually being here. Everyone else has been evacuated to, where did they get evacuated to? Not Norwich. They have like some specific spot link. That's their vacation.
But she's like, there was these underground generators built, nuclear generators, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was plans for them, but they never got made, but maybe one of them did.
And that's how much power you would need in order to operate something like a time scoop.
Yeah, time scoop. That was almost the title of this serial, time scoop.
I like it.
So they go into the file room and find files that prove Sarah Jane right. But
then the minister pulls a gun on her.
And he opens the door. They go into the room, they open the door, and there's a hallway outside instead of the room they left. Because, yeah, he's in on it.
Secret lift!
The minister had seemed so nice, too. Minister for magic. He's tricksy. I want a secret elevator. Secret lift. Then life would be sweet. You have so many secrets up and down all over the place.
He offers multiple people to make tea for them. So you got really happy because you were like, I think people have offered to make tea for Sarah Jane multiple times and no one's asked her to make it for them.
Thank God. So we're near the end of episode 3, and this is when we were going to stop watching for the night. But this is what happens at the end of episode 3. They take Sarah Jane to a room, strap her in a chair, lights start flashing all around her, and she passes out. She wakes up, and there's a guy there who's like, welcome, you've made it, or whatever, we've unfrozen you. And she's like, what? And she looks out the window, and they're on a motherfucking spaceship.
She's in space!
And he's like, we're heading to our new home. So we got to that point where we're like, well, shit.
We're not stopping for tonight. I have got... Why is she on a spaceship? Where are they going from here?
They're getting Golgafringimed. No, this was a great plot twist. This is one of the best cliffhangers I think Doctor Who has ever had, because it's just so out of left field. It totally does tie into the ongoing plot, but you're just like, what? Did I miss an episode? What a right angle spaceship with weird giant signs.
I was like, what is happening? Why? What? Huh?
It was the most enjoyable curveball I think Doctor Who has ever thrown at me.
It was amazing. So that was the end of episode 3, and we're now into episode 4, which I've called Sarah Jane on a Spaceship. Well, they didn't even... I mean, it's not even really a spaceship. Spoilers.
I called that one.
Yeah. Oh, the guy that wakes her up. What was his name? Was it John Crichton?
I think it was. Because I remember having a tiny breakdown. I'm like, did he just say John Crichton? Did he just say John Crichton? John Crichton
is
the main character in Farscape.
Yes.
I find a way to talk about Farscape almost once an episode of the podcast.
I'm going to look up his name because I think it was John Crichton.
I love Farscape so much. It's a great show.
Then we find out that Finch is in on it as well. Yes. We knew because he's sketchy as hell.
Yeah, he's suspect.
The doctor's going to go around and investigate things. And then... In the script, he was supposed to get on his motorbike and cruise around searching for signals of the dinosaur's appearance. He's in a fucking jet car. It's never named in the show, but it is called the Whomobile.
I knew when we were watching that, I was like, that's his car. That's his personal car. I was right.
It 100% is. John Pertwee went and personally had this car made. To certain specifications, too, so that it would be street legal.
Yeah, he made sure it was street legal. Apparently, he got pulled over all the time, and they'd be like, There's no way this is street legal. And he'd be like,
it's not wide enough. And he's like, yes, it is.
Measure it.
And then he'd be like, you can't, it doesn't have this. And I'm like, yep, yes, it does. Like, damn.
He said he would get pulled over and they would come to the window and they'd be like, oh shit, it's you. Oh, it's the doctor.
He drove it to the set and like went up to like, or one of the studio, went up to like the producer and was like, look out the window. And they were like, what the hell is that? He's like, it's the Whomobile. We've got to put it on the show. They're like, all right, fine.
That the director of this serial, who was a woman, by the way.
Patty Russell.
She was like, I don't think we used it a lot. I think we used it just enough to keep him happy. And that's it.
What about Bessie? Why doesn't he ever use Bessie?
He's bored of it. He has the Whomobile now. He's precious.
It's like a little... Cause, oh, yeah, they're like, you can't drive a hovercraft on the road, too. And he's like, nope, it's got wheels.
It's got wheels. It's a car. It's street legal, I promise.
We should probably describe it. It's white.
It looks like he's driving a Stingray.
A white Stingray. It's got like a little dome, like a fighter pilot sort of dome front. It's not like a doors that you get into. It's got the slidey bit.
And the whole thing when he takes this car in the episode is that, like, he's got it from the military. And the Brooke's like, are you sure you want this? And he's like, speed is of the essence. And this thing can go super fast. And like the only time he's shown driving it, he's going like 20 down the road.
Holding his little thing out the window, scanning for stuff.
I love this Stingray Mobile. Yeah, it probably has all sorts of secret gadgets. It's got harpoons. The license plate can flip around so he can fool the cops and eject into a smaller car that's waiting on another side street.
I bet it like just like shot out tacks out of the back of it to slow down bad guys.
A very strong net.
Oil spills.
I would drive this car, no question. Whatever happened to it? Who owns it now? I bet someone goes out and tools around on a Sunday and frightens the children.
I love the ridiculous.
The show definitely does not have the budget for this sort of thing, so.
Well, the show didn't spend any money on it. John Pertwee did. John Pertwee should have bought some better dinosaurs. How dare you not pay for our dinosaurs? You're not coming back next season.
Aww.
It's a good thing John Pertwee is willing to fund the show's awesomeness levels, because otherwise everything would be cardboard. What other shows are actors responsible for the props? How often does Dr. Actor just bring in a cool thing like, I want my cat in the show, write him in? That's what I would do if I was playing the Doctor, which is why I never will. And that's the only reason why.
So, but Sarah Jane, meanwhile, on the spaceship, meets the elders, who are all, like, famous people. They're, like, peace activists and an author, and...
There was one sports guy. What was he? Like, a tennis player. And I was like, why is he there?
Variety?
And then the one guy with the beard and the cool jacket, he looks like John Sims' dad. He looks like the actor who played the master in the Russell T. Davies era. They look, like, strikingly similar. It caught me off guard when I was first watching it, because, like, the way he turns his head, I'm like, what is the future master doing here? Are they that on the ball with... It references paying back to each other. That was like, he has the same haircut, he's got the same beard, he's got a very similar faces. Good job, man.
Basically, their whole deal is they're going to make a colony of better people because it's the future and Earth is fucked, I guess. And they're going to make a colony of just good people.
What do you mean it's the future? Yeah, it's not the future.
It's a little bit in the future.
What are you talking
about? It's supposed to be like 6 months in the future.
It's not... Like, they're making...
Well, they're like, the Earth's not great, we're gonna leave it and go to a new planet.
Yeah, that's got nothing to do with it being the future. That was your theory. You thought they were in the future.
I mean, they kind of are in the future. Well, they think... It's supposed to be like 6 months.
6 months is not in the future!
It's in the future from the rest of the serial! And there's...
But that doesn't mean that it's in the future.
There's 7 ships of people. There's a whole bunch of people. Okay, sorry, it was 3 months. It was 3 months.
Do you know... What I like about this bit that I didn't really think about until just right now, really, is that Sarah Jane is like, these guys are dumb. We're years away from inventing, like, space travel. Of course this is all fake. But also, like, we all just bought that we invented time travel, though, and only used it as a distraction to bring dinosaurs.
Yeah.
We all bought that. We did without question. Did you hear about the guy who claimed to be a time traveler?
He made vague predictions.
Yeah, he made really vague predictions, but also it was like, he got fired and now he's stuck here. And he's only from 2020, I think.
You know what? If you're from the future, just give us Star Wars spoilers. That would prove it.
Would it?
Yeah.
I mean, it would prove it by the year 2020. We'd have to wait.
Well, I mean, you can tell us about the one that's about to come out.
Oh, yeah, okay. If someone gave you, like, real legit Star Wars spoilers, would you be like, all right, fine, you're a time traveler, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Weird Al's The Saga Begins song was based entirely on just internet rumors.
And it was mostly right?
Yeah. I think it's actually 100% right. But, I mean, to be fair, you're working with a prequel that has to build towards things. Right. So certain things have to happen.
I mean, yeah, time travelers are walking among us. You need to prove that you're a time traveler. Just spoilers from a movie or TV show we're watching. Just give us Star Wars spoilers. Tell us what's going on in episode 8.
By the time this podcast comes out, Star Wars will be out.
Star Trek.
The Quentin Tarantino Star Trek? They say fuck a lot. Quentin Tarantino invents, like, slurs for all of the alien races and uses them frequently. That sounds like something he would actually do.
Yes, it does!
Okay, so it is 3 months in the future because they say that, and Sarah Jane's like, I still have this bruise, which at this point looks like a really bad makeup job, by the way. It does not look like a real bruise.
Okay.
It looked better to begin with, but now it looks like they just threw a thing on.
Don't think they're in the future.
They do!
I mean, like, I feel like what you're saying is misleading.
I mean, they tell her she's been frozen for 3 months.
That doesn't mean they think they're in the present.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the present for them.
They went through 3 months linearly.
Us as an audience think that possibly Sarah Jane has traveled to the future.
Not traveled to the future.
Well, that she's in space three months past what we're watching.
But we don't think she's time traveled, and I think that's an important distinction to make. You're making it sound like Sarah Jane time traveled to this spaceship.
No, I'm saying she's been frozen for 3 months, so she's in the future from what the rest of the serial takes place in. She's not, but that's what it seems like.
Maybe.
Like, she's 3 months ahead of everybody else. That's what I'm saying. It's not that difficult. So the doctor follows his beep-beep device to the underground. He does not bump into any abominable snowmen.
I don't know if this was a set or they went and filmed it in some actual, you know, tube station that wasn't being used right now. It looks exactly perfect. Looks like all my experiences of using the subway system in London. And I think it's all the more gripping and interesting like that because the action is taking place somewhere that probably most people in the UK have been. I've always found that way with movies and TV shows and stuff. If it's somewhere that I physically been to, I'm like, oh wow, it's in Vasquez Rocks. We were there. You know, you just... It's more exciting because you've been there. So I think they could stand to have more stuff take place in tube stations. I want to see episodes set on a tube train.
I've never been any place where people film things, so I don't know that feeling.
I rode the exact ride that Woody Harrelson rides at the end of Zombieland.
Did you have that feeling while watching the end of Zombieland?
Yes. I saw Weird Al there, too. It was awesome.
We're going to see him again soon.
Okay, you guys, that's enough talking about Weird Al. If anything, we just need to go start a Weird Al podcast because that's what direction we're headed in.
You talking Weird Al to me?
Wait, this podcast is canceled. We're now a You Talking Weird Al to Me podcast.
Hi, this is Joe.
From here on.
That is some good parody music.
we do a music show at work. It's an Americana country music show. And the host of it is like, but Weird Al's coming here.
We should interview Weird Al. He's done at least 3 country songs. At least.
I'm pulling really hard for it.
I mean, I have a picture of Weird Al wearing a shirt that I've designed. I don't know the story, but I definitely recognize him wearing a Hawaiian shirt that I've made all the artwork for. And that's just one instance of celebrities that I am adjacent to, but have never met.
I saw that shirt and I got, like, much too excited. Joe showed it to me and I was like, is that Ray's shirt? Is he wearing Ray's shirt?
And Sean Astin as well. You got a picture of Sean Astin wearing it.
Probably gonna...
Which makes more sense.
But when Joe showed me that picture, I was like, if he is on More Than the Music, if he is on the show, and we talk to him, would it be weird to be like, you have a shirt designed by my friend? I don't know if you know this.
Have him record the intro to our Weird Al podcast.
I will. I've talked to his mother-in-law, I think, once. Or his aunt. I don't remember. It was some family member. He posted her phone number on Twitter once. It was like during Thanksgiving. He's like, talk to my random relative. So I did. She was like, so you like his music? And I was like, yeah. We're very proud of him.
That's so cute.
It was adorable.
I'm very serious about doing a Weird Al podcast.
All right. We can go through his albums.
Oh.
That's what he calls them.
Okay.
Probably.
Probably.
I've been half jokingly saying, if I do meet Weird Al, I will be like, hey, you know Paul F. Tompkins, right? Can you get him on our podcast? Because that is my dream for this podcast, is to get Paul F. Tompkins.
You just
want to
hang out with Paul F. Tompkins.
He's a Doctor Who fan. It makes sense.
No, you just want to hang out with him.
I do want to hang out with him. Yes, but I also want him on the podcast.
That's awesome.
He was in New York recently, and a certain friend of the podcast met Paul F. Tompkins.
Got his picture taken with him.
Got his picture taken with him.
It's a nice looking picture.
Chris Cherry went to go see one of his live podcasts. I don't remember the name of the show.
He won't listen to podcasts.
What? I listen to podcasts.
Name one podcast you listen to.
I listen to Comedy Bang Bang, and I listen to You Talking You Two to Me.
Spontanea Nation is Paul F. Tompkins' podcast, and it's the best. It doesn't fit into Comedy Bang Bang continuity, so when you're wanting to take a break from Comedy Bang Bang, just watch listen to Spontanea Nation. It's your dream. It's your best friend come true. It's a podcast for all time. I like it way more than Comedy Bang Bang. It's the best. Why aren't you listening to it now? Stop watching this, listen to this stupid podcast. Go listen to it.
I want to. I want to listen to all of them. I just haven't gotten around to them yet because I'm trying to catch up on Bang Bang. And there's 600 episodes of that.
You're going to listen to all of Bang Bang?
I've already listened.
Before you listen to anything else?
Possibly. I've already listened to over 300 episodes.
Okay, we really got to get back on track.
So, the Doctor goes underground, to the underground. Right. There's no Yetis. He hears something, hides under a bench.
As you do.
And it's one of the scientists who gets into a...
secret lift!
A second secret lift.
Mm-hmm.
This one's a cupboard.
At least two.
There's the file room, the file cabinet room mm-hmm. lift. And this one is like the janitor's closet. So he goes down and the Doctor follows behind and is like trying to figure out how to activate the elevator. Does. Goes down into the underground. Under the underground. It sets off like a light bulb on a map. So the scientists know he's there and they trap him.
They know someone's coming down the elevator.
Yeah. And they start shutting doors on him. And this is the wobbliest set I've ever seen.
Those doors move fast. And there was actually... a scene where I was a little frightened.
That he's gonna get hit?
Yes.
And, every time the door slams, the walls beside him jiggle. But they basically are leading him around to back to the elevator. Because that's the only place he can go. The door opens. So he gets back on the elevator, goes back upstairs, and, is attacked by a pterodactyl. Again. The scientist sick one on him. And he fights it off with a mop. Meanwhile, Sarah Jane is not entirely happy with her situation and argues with the elders. And they're like, oh, you need to be re-educated. Vince kind of pointed this out. They think of themselves as morally superior.
Mm.
And then at one point, the main female elder is like, we should probably just kill Sarah Jane. We should destroy her, right? Because she's not falling in line. But they do take her to this room to basically be brainwashed.
This re-education room, like, that sounds really scary, the idea that you're going to be taken and brainwashed and re-educated. It's just a room with some bench seating, and they're showing a documentary. You'd expect her to, like, hook up mind probes to her and be electrocuting her and rubbing soap all over their brain so they can be brainwashed, but it's just like, did you even know that humans were terrible? See, look, here's a picture of garbage. They suck. That's why we're leaving them forever. It's not the re-education room, it's the sad documentary room. And when later they're like, oh, it didn't take. She needs to watch it again. That's just punishment. Go watch the documentary again. Rewind the VHS and watch it again until you learn.
That is true. They like call it, what do they call that room? The reminder room?
I think so.
And they're like, we all spend time in the reminder room. Somebody questions somebody else and they're like, maybe you need to spend some time in the reminder room. And he reacts frighteningly, like, please, I've seen the documentary so many times. Please don't make me watch it. So their deal is basically they think they're going to another planet.
Their little squadron is being sent back in time. They just don't know that they are. And if you don't know you're being sent back in time, then it doesn't count.
Going back in time? There's no time travel!
No, they are going to go back in time. That's what's going
to
happen.
Actually, back in time is going to come to them. Anyway.
What?! That's the dumbest thing you've ever said.
It's accurate, though. Yeah, are they being taken back to, like,
Yeah,
Jurassic.
Yeah, that's they're going to wipe out humanity and start new.
That's too far back. Like, let's wait until there's not like giant fucking.
Well, they're taking dinosaurs. I don't know if they're going back to the time of dinosaurs.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm not sure.
How far back are they going? Like,
they're
let's
just going to the golden age
where there's like mammals, like small mammals, and not like the big fuckers.
So the doctor brings the brig back to the underground. But now the elevator is just a closet. Yeah, because there's a coat rack that had the trigger on it that triggered the elevator, and that coat rack is gone. And it's just the doctor and the brig in a small closet, hanging out together, being all romantic.
This episode sponsored yet again by Bisexual Brigadier, who knew what they were getting us into.
There you go. Well, they go to the minister. And everyone lies about what happened to Sarah Jane. The bad guys sort of have this conference saying they're going to discredit the doctor. The doctor just thinks that the dinosaurs are a distraction, which they are. So the doctor makes a suggestion that I believe he has never made before. In fact, it's usually this is UNIT's suggestion. And the doctor's like, this is a bad suggestion. But this time it's the doctor's suggestion to UNIT, which is, I want to blow it up. He wants to go back to where the elevator is and blow up where the elevator is so they can get down to the underground. So Whitaker calls the doctor and says, all this dinosaur stuff is the minister. He's bad. You gotta come save me. He's kidnapped me. It's bad. We should talk about it. And the doctor's like, well, come to me. And he's like, oh, I can't. I don't want to leave. Come to the hangar. I'm at the hangar where you had the T-Rex. And the doctor's like, okay, this doesn't sound like a trap. And goes and walks right into a trap. And he walks into the hangar and there's this weird dome thing there. This like device. And a Stegosaurus appears. And UNIT busts in at the same time. General Finch and all them. And they're like, ha-ha! We've caught you red-handed! Bringing these dinosaurs here.
You're standing adjacent to the dinosaurs, like you have several times before this episode. This is hardly red-handed. He's not, like, that incriminated. And he's just there. Like, he has plenty of reasonable explanations for why he would be doing that.
Yeah, but now he's nearby a, like, scientific device that possibly scoops up the dinosaurs. That is the end of episode 4. We are now into episode 5, which I've called The Underground Spaceship.
I call it the worst Yates gets.
In the last episode, Sarah Jane has been sort of becoming friends with the athlete person. He comes and warns her that the elders basically want to kill her. So Sarah Jane escapes, which is, she just walks right out the airlock.
Yeah, she has her suspicions that it's not real.
Because she pressed a bunch of buttons on like a display and it didn't do anything. Which is hella dangerous? What if they were on a spaceship? She just, like, turned off all the air and gravity.
But she's trying to convince him that they're not on a spaceship. This is all fake. She's like, I'll prove it to you. I'm gonna go out the airlock. And he's like, please don't die.
But she opens the door, does not get sucked into the vastness of space, and just waves at him and walks out.
What a good, weird twist that's in the middle of the serial.
But the doctor has been captured by UNIT. He blames the minister, obviously. Like, everybody sort of leaves, and he's like, goes up to Yates, and he's like, all right, Yates, let's plan our plan. Let's escape and all this stuff. And Yates is like, no, you will be taken away, and sort of walks off. And then Benton comes in and is like, what up, doc? Let's plan an escape. Always Benton! Never Yates!
And I really like what Benton does here, where he's like, this is where you're gonna overpower me, right? He's...
Yes!
Oh no, this scene's so good! Oh no! He's like wincing, and he's like, okay, do it. And the doctor's like, are you ready? And he's like, no, do it!
And he neck pinches him and drops him on the floor. He could have been a little more gentle about it. He just drops him on the ground. He could have gently laid baby Benton on the floor.
Oh, poor Benton.
I love Benton.
Hey, Joe, how do you feel about Benton?
Always Benton! Never Yates! You talking Benton to me?
I want the show where it's just a brigadier taking care of baby Benton with dinosaurs. That's the show that I want. So make it happen, BBC. Baby in Charge. What's a good name for a baby in charge movie?
The Infantry.
Oh. What's the tree?
Infant in the Infantry. So Benton is going to be court-martialed, and everyone leaves him alone with Brig, and Brig is like, fuck that, get the men together, we're gonna go do shit.
Well, the Brig's like, well, arrest yourself. And he's like, what? Okay. Sure. Because he is sad when he's like, okay, I'm gonna be arrested, that's fine. And when the Brig, like, sort of lets him off the hook, he's like, oh, okay, thanks. I've never been in trouble in my whole life.
Sarah Jane gets out of the ship and is basically in the same area with the scientists.
Yes. She's at, like, the secret base place.
She finds the secret file room elevator, gets in that, takes it up.
Are they going to send all of London back in time and that's why it's evacuated, or just their little pretend spaceship? Because if they sent all of London back in time, I feel like that would be problematic.
Yeah, I think there is, like, a radius of how big the time travel works.
So won't the people be suspicious about all of these buildings there they remember?
No, the past is coming to them. They're not going to the past.
What does that even mean? Okay, so just people are traveling, not... No, they're going back in time.
Yeah, back in time's coming to them.
What does that mean? It's not like the past is coming to the present day. They're going to the past because they're going to wipe out humanity.
No, the past is coming to them, and then they're going to wipe out humanity.
It doesn't make any sense. I'm going to keep talking about this show and ignore you. So the doctor is being followed by a helicopter and other soldiers. He ditches the car, runs out into the trees, and all the soldiers come to try to find him.
These soldiers don't look super tough. They have, like, pouty lips. I mean, I've never met the British army, but you always imagine them being more sort of tough guys. These guys did not seem very tough. Get your army together, England.
I've done extra work occasionally, and I am part of casting groups on Facebook and stuff, and they're always, like, looking for military people, but it's always, like, looking for specifically for people who have had military experience and stuff, because they want it to look more legit than just some dude. But the doctor, like, is running around in the woods and circles back to the cars, gets in one of the military cars, calls him up, and, like, yeah, we captured the doctor.
I just think he puts on a voice.
Yeah, he probably doesn't. He's like, he's been captured, we're gonna bring him back in, call off the search. And drives off, and it works. So Sarah Jane has made it back to unit, has been informed that the doctor is the bad guy, which she does not buy, writes a note for the Brig, and then gets Finch, like, comes in and she talks to him, and he's like, I believe you. Let's go back to the minister's. Or he's like, I don't know if I believe you. Show me some evidence. And she takes him to the minister's place and shows him the files. And then he's like, pulls a gun on her. She's like, damn it! That's 2 for 2 that I've been wrong on. It's the second time I've been betrayed in this very same secret lift.
She keeps picking the wrong people to trust.
And so she gets taken to the scientists and then gets filled in on the plan, which is they're taking everyone back to an earlier time. The Golden Age. They call up all of the dinosaurs to fill the streets to take out the doctor, I guess. And the doctor drives into the T-Rex. And that's the cliffhanger. It's the third time we've ended on a rubber dinosaur. That's the end of episode 5. We're now into episode 6, which I've called Dinosaurs on the Underground. Or is it on or in?
It seems like you're giving these less and less effort.
Yeah. So the dinosaurs start fighting each other very slowly.
Even though it, like, looks ridiculous and is happening in, like, basically slow motion, I was still like, no!
The one dinosaur is basically like, hold on, let me move my head a little bit more into your mouth. There you go. Now you're biting me. It's like helping him.
Are they puppets or people in costumes?
I don't think they're people in costumes. They're puppets. They're all puppets, I think.
Okay.
They're not very good puppets. It doesn't even, like, distract the doctor, because the dinosaurs are fighting each other, so the doctor just runs away. So he's caught by unit, the doctor is, but then the Brig shows up and is like, I'll take him. And then other units like, all right, cool, drive off. And then the Brig's like, all right, what are we doing?
It does not go that smoothly. Literally, the military is like, this is mutiny. And he's like, how is it mutiny if I'm just doing my job?
Yeah.
If I'm just capturing the prisoner, which is what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah, it scared me a little bit because I'm like, the Brig is being like, he could get in trouble for this. I am worried for him. It is scary. Like, I think Benton actually, like, had a gun on Finch.
Meanwhile, Sarah Jane has been locked into a room that has a giant ass air vent.
Yeah, just big enough for her to crawl through.
But back at unit, the doctor finds Sarah Jane's note And then Yates pulls a gun on everyone.
Yates! Yates, I stood up for you.
Yates tells the doctor the plan. The doctor tries to talk some sense into him. Does not work.
So here's the thing. Yates knows what the plan is. He hasn't been misled in any way. He knows exactly that they're trying to overwrite history. And they say, Yates, you're going to be overwritten. And he's like, oh, that's okay. I'm not important. Everyone thinks they're important.
You're not wrong.
I disagree.
I don't know if anybody would be like, I'm not important. I will erase myself from existence for the good of humanity or whatever.
I totally believe that some people would do that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Y'all ain't never had depression.
Yeah, he's not doing it for depression reasons.
I'm just saying, I have known people who think that they are unimportant.
Yeah,
but... And if they could, like, do something in, like, a... Like, give their life to a bigger cause, then they are doing something important with their life.
It does.
That is a real thought process that real people have. I buy it, is what I'm saying.
I don't buy it. It seems a little... It doesn't seem in character for Yates.
That's maybe true.
Before the scene started happening, the doctor sent out this other unit guy for tea. And he was so excited to go get the tea.
He doesn't know what's happening and he doesn't know what he's supposed to do. He's literally just like, kid...
What do I need to do?
Are we staying here? Are we evacuating? Can someone please give me an order?
So Yates pulls his gun and does all this. And then the tea guy comes back with the tea. He's like, I got the tea! Isn't this exciting? And Yates is like, what? And turns around and Benton just attacks Yates. Benton takes Yates out.
And Joseph is the happiest I've ever seen him.
Always been. Never yet. Yates? Never Yates.
Never Yates.
Sometimes
Joe Yates. Reaches, like, the peak of his vindication right here.
The second that Benton's fist met Yates' face. I was so pleased. So pleased. So people are starting to wake up on the spaceship.
Were they actually, like, asleep or frozen? I don't even know how many people they have in their little fake spaceship. Because, like, if they're actually frozen, that's an odd detail.
No, because these people were all tricked.
Yeah.
So maybe they were just, like, drugged.
That's possible. I mean, they definitely did something to Sarah Jane in that room with the lights.
Yeah, they did something to, like, put them under.
So Sarah Jane sneaks back on because she's crawled through the vents. She sneaks back onto the spaceship, tells everyone, this is all fake, this is what's going on, and they don't buy it. And they're, like, trying to, like, restrain her, and they do. They take her to, I guess, holding or whatever. But the novelist guy, the John Sims-looking dude, decides to call the other ship, because he's like, this has gotten messy, we need to talk to the higher-up.
Oh, is this the scene where the Minister for Magic comes over in the spacesuit? Why didn't he just, like, Skype them and be like, yes, here I am in the other spaceship. Get Skype, 1970s.
It's so cheesy and great. And he's like, the minister is like, the scientist comes up to the minister and is like, you gotta go talk to these people. And he's like, oh man, I gotta get the suit on. I'm too busy, but I guess I gotta.
They also, like, when he shows up, they have this whole long sequence of, like, all right, the one spaceship is hooking up to the other spaceship. They're, like, explaining... One character is explaining to another character exactly what's happening as it's happening. Which is great, because we know that it's not happening. They're like, okay, now the two ships have been docked together. Now they're leveling out the air pressure and both things and making sure they match. Now it's safe to open the airlock. Like, it takes ages. It's such an elaborate lie.
Meanwhile, the Doctor and Brig are going back to the underground. They drive under a dinosaur. It's great. And then they get to the underground and it's blocked by a stegosaurus, so they can't get in. So they have to bomb it to get it to back up. No, sorry, it wasn't a stegosaurus. It was a triceratops. It's guarded by a triceratops. So... The minister is gotten into the room with Sarah Jane and the athlete, whose name is Mark, not John. And he basically is like, yeah, I know you guys know, and just starts talking openly about the plan. But apparently these walls are thin as hail, and the novelist is listening in. But the minister is being like...
Thought our fake spaceship was more soundproof than this.
And there's this whole thing about, like, the end justifies the means, and then he's like... The end never justifies the means, or whatever. Okay, so back at the underground, they are trying to blow up the underground so they can get underground. But there's this, the Triceratops is poking his nose in, and the Brig has to keep it back with a flare. And it's kind of adorable.
It's a good scene.
They do blow a hole in the elevator. They rope down. Well, the Doctor ropes down. The Brig's going to go get reinforcements. And Benton can't says he's going to send them, but he can't send them because Finch is holding a gun on him. And this is the point where Benton punches the general in the face and is attacking him.
He's also very, like, apologetic about it. Where he, like, punching him in the face and he's like, sorry, sir. He's like, you'll be court-martialed. Like, yes, sir, probably, sir. Like, he never stops being kind of, like, very professional.
Meanwhile, the novelist has freed Sarah Jane, and she opens the airlock for everyone to see. Look, I'm not dead. And they're like, oh, okay. And they all leave.
These people are just so trusting. Trusting of everybody. Except for the one lady. The older lady is still kind of, like, scary. She's just willing to destroy anyone who stands in her way.
I do think that part of the way this was written is to be sort of critical of movements like this and how they can sometimes be kind of...
extreme?
Yeah. The Doctor has a really good sort of line where he's like, where he's trying to convince Yates. It's the scene where he's trying to speak some sense into Yates and it's not working. And he's like, look, you can't, there's no golden age. There never was. You can't go back and, you know, fix things. All you can do is make the best of the world you have now. I liked that bit. It was a good bit.
So all of the people storm the headquarters, basically. The minister tries to give his speech of why he's doing this. The unit and doctor show up, and they're like, well, we're doing it now, and pull the lever, and they start to go back in time. But the doctor is not affected by it. And it's like a really weird effect, too. It's like everybody's doubling up and zooming around.
Well, the doctor has time powers. He's just more talented at time stuff. He can swim against the current.
And he does something to it. What does he do to it?
Reverse the polarity.
He certainly does.
He does.
And it stops, and then the minister and Whitaker, the scientist, disappear with the device. They apparently do go back in time. Presumably, they don't fuck up humanity.
Presumably, they get eaten by a dinosaur immediately.
That's what I want. It's a brontosaurus, right? Just chops them up.
Yeah, that's historically accurate.
Then we get a wrap-up of the doctor explaining everything. We find out that Yates has been given, basically...
they let him resign, I think.
Yeah, he's not, like, fired or anything. It's not bad, necessarily, but... and then Benton just gushes about how he got to punch a general and how that was super fun. And then Brig is like, don't get used to it. And again, I'm going to say it one more time. Always Benton, never Yates!
All right. You've had your day.
Yates hates.
I think, actually, by the time that this, like, serial happened, there was a little bit where he was like, Yates, no.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little sad, because I did like... I mean, I've never been, like, full-on hating Yates. I've always just been full-on preferring Benton.
But it's every time Yates is on screen, you're like, why is he here and not Benton?
Exactly, because he's not as good as Benton. Now he's really not as good as Ben.
Now you're really committed to disliking him, because you were like...
because I was right. But now that that's all wrapped up...
it's like that one friend that gets introduced to the friend group, and you're like, I'm not about that person. Don't know why, but I'm not about that person. And then all the shit comes out about him, and you're like, fucking yes! Can we all talk about how much we hate this person now?
Fucking Kyle. I don't know. Wait, I know a Kyle. I probably shouldn't say that. It's not... it's not you, Kyle. I promise. I just was pulling a name out of the air.
It's not anyone I know currently. Because I don't talk to this person anymore. Because I don't have to.
So now that all that's wrapped up, the doctor, because Sarah Jane has not officially become a companion yet. She was accidentally dragged to medieval England.
Oh god, this scene now is so cute.
She's been brought back to present day. So now the doctor gets to be like, hey.
What he does here in this scene is openly discussed in
the God Complex.
He is doing exactly what he talks about in the God Complex right here.
And he's making his pitch.
As much as I get the God Complex, you're like, yeah, that's probably not the healthiest thing for you, and you're actively doing it. It's adorable here.
Yeah.
So in the God Complex, there's some discussion about how he sort of picks people up, whether it's good for them or not. And they're like, well, yeah, but they make that choice. And it's like, nah.
But you sell it to them as this great, wonderful thing.
You offer a kid a whole candy store, and what are they going to do?
But yeah, he's pitching like, oh, I'll take you to these wonderful, beautiful places.
Sarah Jane is like, he's like, you're going to come travel with me, right? And she's like, no, that sounds stressful. She's like, I have been on the TARDIS as much as I want to be on the TARDIS. I am done.
And he just keeps badgering her until...
I mean, it is teasing. Yeah. It is not actual, like, harassing. It is like, oh, but we could go to this place, and this place is gorgeous, and this place has this. And she's like, I'm not listening, la, la, la.
But smiling while doing it.
Yeah, and it's adorable, and I love it. And you're also sitting there with the knowledge that she's, like, one of the longest-running companions. You're like, you've already lost this battle. You know. Your heart is in it now. You're here.
But that's the end of the invasion of the dinosaurs. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for final thoughts.
All right.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. We're stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com.
We all smoke down here, Georgie.
And we're back!
Final thoughts!
Right, what's your final thoughts?
Final thoughts. I really liked this episode. This is like the first six-parter that I didn't think needed to not be a six-parter. You know, I'm always getting on Classic Who episodes for the pacing, but I thought this one had really great pacing for the time. I mean, the dinosaur puppet props do let you down, but I feel like you're in a position to roll with it. Like, of course, I'd love to see that with better dinosaurs. I'm sure there's a fan edit somewhere of better dinosaurs edited into the show. I'm sure of it. But like the villain, there were several villains and they were all really compelling. They all had interesting stuff going on. The setup with Yates, you know, when I saw Yates be all betrayed, I knew Joe was going to be so happy for that. And now we got to get Joe a t-shirt that's some sort of anti-Yates shirt because I bet he would love that. But yeah, the villains were really interesting. Doctor had a lot to do. Sarah Jane had a lot to do. The Brigadier and Benton had some great little one-liners and snark there on the sidelines. I mean, they had stuff to do too, but they weren't the focus of the episode. I think that if this was New Who or something else, I'd like to have seen what would happen if the colonists actually got sent back in time and the Doctor had to sort out that, because that was a really great catastrophe that they averted. But like, do that catastrophe and have him figure it out. Like, London could just disappear around the Doctor and he's stuck on this weird jungle ruins planet all of a sudden. Like, if this was a New Who episode, you could take that farther. Have all of this episode be part one and all of, you know, continue off from there with a different ending. But that's a weird sideways quibble that's not actually directed to the episode at all, which I think this one was really good. I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Classic Who, and I've had issues with the pacing, but this one was really snappy and fun. The pterodactyls in the subway, seeing them actually in the underground. You know, I've been there in London, and I'm sure so many of the other people watching the show have. Seeing dangerous things take place in an environment you are very familiar with is extra exciting. And yeah, I thought they did a really good job. This is a really underrated episode, as I'm sure Tony will tell you right now. Final thoughts.
Okay, I feel like if this serial has a fandom reputation, if it has a fandom reputation of being just like, this is the one with like the shitty dinosaurs in it, then what the fuck? You guys are missing out on this fucking serial. It is so good. I think this is an underrated serial. We have like a really interesting motivation for the bad guys. We have people who, like you said, just like are want to make the world a better place, but they're being about the most extreme about it as you can. Just like the creepy feel of like the first couple of episodes where you're trying to figure out like what's going on. And I mean, there are some times where it's like, what's going on? And you're like, I don't know. And I don't really care. Like, tell me. So I have something to like sort of grab onto, you know? Like, sometimes the mystery is boring because you don't know what's going on, whereas this is like, you have just enough. You have just enough where you're like, okay, and then what? And then what happens? And then what happens? And then what happens? And then it throws you this crazy curveball of, like, Sarah Jane being in space, which is the best cliffhanger ever of all time. Like, when that happened, we were just sitting there like,
what?
We have to watch the next episode. We can't end like this. I can't go to bed now, not knowing what's happening.
It was one of the biggest twists I've seen on Doctor Who since the one time we accidentally watched episodes out of order. And you know what the twist was in that episode?
Remember we accidentally skipped forward in Enemy of the World, and he had like a whole bunch of people locked underground, tricking him into thinking that the Earth was destroyed.
Oh, that's right.
Kind of the opposite of this.
But yeah, like, and the betrayal of taking a character who we have known for a long time, and some of us have even loved, not all of us, but some of us. I always think of Yates as like one of the unit people. And that, like, for this actually has been, like, the first serial where I now know the difference between Ben and Yates. I always just think of him like, there's a unit guy. It's either Ben or Yates. But I could see how a lot of people, like, really love Yates, especially in The Green Death. He had, like, a lot of particularly good character moments. He had a lot of adorable scenes with the Doctor. And then to have this episode where, I mean, and it's really his, like, altruism that has, like, led him so astray. He's going to kill everybody in the whole world, just erase their existence. Like, that's a lot. Like, that's a lot to deal with, like, a character that you've known for so long. And it's not done in a way where it sort of comes out of nowhere. I mean, maybe a little bit. But in the episode itself, I feel like they sort of set up his motivation. And it's believable. You're not just like, anyway, I've been actually evil this whole time, and, you know.
That was the only part that did ring false to me, is that he did seem conflicted about it now and then, because he's like, he didn't want to hurt the Doctor, and he didn't want to do this, but he's going along with
that.
It. No, yeah, that's fine. But the only time it doesn't feel right is when he's like, erase the world, I'm not important. That doesn't jive with what he's done prior.
Oh, because I guess, yeah, you're right. That does make, because he doesn't want any harm to come to the Doctor. Not really thinking.
Or Sarah Jane, or anybody.
Not really thinking, if we erase everyone.
What does it matter?
That's harm. Yeah, that's true. I don't know if it's, like, abstract enough for him. I mean, I'm willing to say that, and use that as kind of a band-aid. But it hurts, you know? It hurts in a way that, like, having just a bad guy doesn't hurt. Especially since, like, you've been getting on to him, like, ah, oh, it's Yates. Why do they use Yates when they could be using Benton? And I was like, shut up, leave Yates alone! And now he's done this to me, and now he's betrayed me in this way. There's just like a lot of really interesting commentary going on in this. The pacing is amazing, which I don't think we've ever said on this podcast about a six-parter before, ever. There's really interesting twists. Like, I have so many good things to say about this serial. And for it to, like, only be remembered as, like, oh, there are some shitty dinosaurs in it. That's awful! Like, watch this serial! It's so good!
I'd even say the dinosaurs are enjoyable in their own cheesy, bad kind of way.
Oh, yeah!
You guys have pretty much said everything.
Those are my final thoughts.
It was moody. It was good. There were so many good twists of being on a spaceship, of Yates.
One thing. Sarah Jane was amazing in it.
Yeah.
I love her immediately.
Sarah Jane did so much this serial. She figured out most things. She moved the plot forward a lot. And also, I feel like she maybe was the damsel in distress on it a handful of times, but she never...
I mean, she got captured, but she wasn't in distress ever.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think she screamed once. Maybe when the pterodactyl was dive bombing her, but that's fine.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah. There's no, like, oh, doctor, sort of screaming. And every time she's gotten captured, she got out of it herself. I think the doctor broke her out of the hangar. That was the one time she got saved. But when she gets captured and put on the spaceship, she escapes by herself. When she gets put in that room,
she not only gets out by herself, she goes back and gets everyone else out.
Yeah. She's badass and awesome. And I love Sarah Jane. She's great. I kind of enjoyed the dinosaurs for their cheesiness. I enjoy the rest of the show for its intrigue and sort of plot twistiness is really well written. The last thing I'll say is, always Ben, never Yates. I love you, Ben. You're the best. So, let's move on. Ray, you got anything to plug?
What am I working on at the moment? Oh, we're doing so many things. We're doing the Foggiest webcomic, which Joe and Tony both write for. They did a heist comic that you might see at some point. Joe also wrote a story for my anthology comic, Cats Committing Crimes, that should be out sometime in the new year. And then Joe and fellow friend of the show, Vince, and I, we wrote a book called The Princess and the Pterodactyls. There were pterodactyls in this episode, there are pterodactyls in the book, and it is available from all good ebook retailers. So you should read it. If you are a fan of the show, you will be a fan of this book. Because And that's all that I have to say.
And if you like this episode, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. Be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It's very nice and very helpful. Please do that. If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to WatchYourAssalon.com/support. And there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. There you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, where you will see me sneeze 5 times in a row. And we also do live streams where we watch the episodes with you guys. It's a lot of fun. We have guests on occasionally when we watch them. It's a lot of fun. Everybody chats and hangs out. It's pretty cool. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks once again to Bisexual Brigadier for purchasing this DVD for us.
Hey, thanks. You're my favorite.
But that's it. Thanks for listening, guys. Tune in next time when we talk about Death to the Daleks. Bye, you guys.
Bye. I love you. I love you most of all. Not you.
Keep calm and wrestle on.
The end.
Still, I'll say one thing. Not many sergeants get the chance to punch a general on the nose.
Just don't make a habit of it, Benton.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.